This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. Back in the early days of hip-hop, you could hear beats from DJs as you watched the electrifying moves of street dancers. And what started out as popping, locking, and breaking in the 80s has now evolved to regional hip-hop dances like crumping in L.A. and the bounce down in the bayou. Hip-hop choreographer Rennie Harris grew up dancing on the streets of Philadelphia in those early days. In the 1990s, he formed Rennie Harris Pure Movement. The hip-hop dance company bridges the moves of the streets with the prestige of the theater. Rennie Harris Pure Movement performs at the Reynolds Industry Theater in Durham at Duke University this Friday and Saturday at 8 o'clock. But first, Rennie Harris joins me on the State of Things. Welcome. Good to talk with you.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Tell us about the mission behind the Rennie Harris Pure Movement.
Well, it's to educate everyone or educate the masses or whoever wants to be educated about the history of street dance as we understand and as we know it.
That's become your mission, and in some ways you've argued that it got lost. The whole street dance aesthetic got lost as something called hip hop became more popular, and it became a kind of a background dance, right?
Yeah, in the original days, I guess, back in the day, the street dancers were in a foreground, if you will, and the MC and the DJ was in the back, and the street dancers were the draw to the block party or the event. And now, as hip hop comes into play, it becomes the backup dancer. So, meaning, street dancing, locking, popping, and breaking are different from the style of hip hop. Hip hop is another street dance style, which are party dances or what we call social dances that became popular in the community. And those type of dancers became the new thing for hip hop in the mid 80s.
And so this is something that you want to do in a kind of more formal version and bring it to the theater, take it out of the streets, bring it to the theater, but remind everybody or perhaps, as you say, educate everybody about what those early days were all about.
Yeah, and I think really it's about when we talk about street dance or hip hop, anything specific to hip hop, one of the unspoken laws is adaption. So we have to adapt to our environment and our situation. So being in the theater is not necessarily anything different than doing anything else. So we're adapting to the theater as we would adapt to the street or the community event, the barbecue, that kind of thing. And so really it's about us sharing, bringing that and that little bit of slice of culture to the theater, adapting in that theater, and then giving audiences a chance to kind of view, to peek in to that little small world, and to do it in a way that isn't generally done. So we're doing it with narrative, we're doing it abstractly, we're doing it with maybe a theme possibly, right? And so now you get to see it not only the authentic hip hop movement or street dance, but you also looking at all the possibilities of where it could go and where it's going.
And I think you had an experience recently that showed you just how much this term hip-hop has changed in terms of how we understand it. I think you were in a dollar store recently, and it kind of brought you up short.
Yeah, you know, I saw these they had like a dance section with dance gear, I guess, and there was a woman, a white woman, on the package with, in ballet gear, so to speak. She had tutu and point shoes and all pink and unitard, right? And so everything, you know, when you look at it, she's doing this ballet pose. On the top of this package, in bold black, it says hip hop tights. And so it threw me off. I'm like, well, how are these hip hop tights? And there's a woman on the package that's, you know, ballet, clearly a different genre. And so now it becomes really clear that we're talking about cultural theft. We're not just appropriation, not just I love the culture, can I be a guest or be a part of it, but now it's just, oh, we're just going to change it.
That is a popular name. I think we'll put it on our label, but it kind of works in reverse too. I know that. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you respond when colleagues or other dancers question whether what you're doing is hip hop simply because it's in the theater. It's not in the street anymore. It's so is it hip hop? And what about that challenge?
Yeah, it does work. You're absolutely correct. But I kind of remind them that there's other unspoken laws, which I call the three major laws of street dance or hip hop in general, is these laws are individuality, creativity, and innovation. And by design and definition, those words suggest progression, and so therefore, if we're adhering to those laws, then the form, the style, the culture has to progress. And being in theater is part of the progression. So to explain it a little bit more, as a street dancer, basically I couldn't go into the circle or the cipher and do the same move twice. I'm pushed all the time to create new movement, to become creative or innovate the movement genre itself. And so because of that, we're always pushing to move forward and be progressive. And so in being in theater, that is a progression rather than digression, so to speak.
Yeah, and to show you how much it's changed and how far it's progressed, you grew up in Philadelphia and you learned to dance watching Soul Train, am I right?
Yeah, Soul Train was part of the culture of, you know, just dance. Well, dancing is part of a culture. When you talk about African-American culture, you know, it's not uncommon to walk into someone's home and the TV's on, the music is on, and everything else is on, because that's just, you know, we're you know, we have this thing about music and culture anyway. And so we grow up in that. This is our environment. And so, of course, I'm watching Soul Train, and we see they're doing the social party dances that we're used to doing in our neighborhood, in our house. And so it was really Don Campbell and the Campbell Lockers who was the first time to sort of set this whole idea of a street dance group who could be professional and still do what it is that they were doing in the 70s. Like Don Campbell and the Campbell Lockers set the precedent. Like they set the bar. To this day, there's no street dance company in the world that I know of who've reached that bar.
You tried to form a group of your own, didn't you?
Yes, I had a few. It was one, was part of my brother William and my other brother Levi. We had a group called the Cobra 3. And we danced at the talent show at the church and won, and that sort of kind of kicked everything off for me. And then eventually we formed a group, the Scanner Boys, which was known in Philadelphia. And then from there, right before the Scanner Boys, there was the Stepmasters, me and Franklin Stewart, I was a co-captain of this group, and he was the captain of the group called the Stepmasters, and then the Scanner Boys. And then finally in the 90s, I created Rennie Harris Pure Movement.
Those first groups that you formed, does it change the – I mean, you talked about doing street dancing and sort of, being having to create new moves kind of every time you got up, and it was pretty much an ad hoc. I mean, groups would form on the corner. Once you form a group and you start competing, does it change the way you think about dance?
No, I don't think it. I mean, one, I don't think we as children look at it as competition. You know, even though we are competing, but like to say compete suggests some formal method of challenging each other. And in many ways, it's very Africanist to sort of share in the cipher, in the circle, in the bantaba, right? And to say, hey, watch what I can do, and then the other person say, yeah, I can, and push the other person to go higher, to do something better, right? And so it sort of serves as this way, as this progressive way of becoming a man or a woman in that way as a child. You know, so I never thought of that. I don't even thought of it that way. But as others, outsiders who saw what we were doing, they started to put these sort of titles and things. Oh, they're competing, they're challenging each other, they're dancing so they don't fight, and which is most of that stuff was untrue. Like the dance cost a bite most of the time, you know. So, I don't think we looked at it that, you know, in hindsight. Yeah, we were competing in that way. But you know, when you're in it, you're just doing it, and there's no rhyme, there's no reason. And most of the time, if you ask a young person today, hey, what are you doing, and why are you doing it, and where did it come from, that they may not be able to tell you.
What about the music? Just, you know, what were you listening to in the late 70s and early 80s?
Oh, funk music, funk and rock, disco. So, you know, Parliament Funkadelic, Zapp, Roger, Gap Band, stuff like that.
But just to give everybody a sample of what you're listening to, what you're talking about, we've actually got a clip from Zapp and Roger's More Bounce to the Ounce. Let's listen to that. That's a clip from More Bounce to the Ounce, Zapp and Roger. My guest today, hip-hop choreographer Rennie Harris, founder of Rennie Harris Pure Movement. It's a hip-hop dance company performing this Friday and Saturday at Reynolds Industries Theater at 8 o'clock at Duke University. So talk about how you now use the music in your choreography, in your dance productions.
Well, you know, I'm inspired by that era. So a lot of times I may use rock or funk or even disco, and I have producers that will work with me. Most of those producers actually used to dance for me, but they're also very talented in music, like Raphael Xavier, who does all the editing and reshaping the music to give the same sound and the same feel. And a lot of times I switch out the music. So for instance, I may do so a rock song, have them create a rock song, and then we'll do hip-hop party dances to that rock song. But, of course, I'll create the work in a way that it would be, it may be a different a narrative with it, not just dance for dance sake, so to speak. But I like to sort of shift the music. I feel like if you take street dance and you take, let's say if you're popping to Beethoven's Fifth, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to look totally different than what you're used to seeing. You know what I mean? Something about the music and the raw vocabulary of street dancing, and then you take and change the music behind it, it challenges how people view street dance.
But that does bring this question of this different level of intention. Once you call yourself a choreographer and you're going to do this for the theater, it's not just a kind of response to what, you know, everybody knows and everybody on that street corner is familiar with. You really are taking creativity and the art to a different level. I mean, how do you approach that creatively?
Well, you know, the interesting part is I didn't realize I was a choreographer until I was about 36. And because I read the headlines that Harris brings angst street dance to so and so's festival, and like what? It was like choreographer. I was like, choreographer? I'm a choreographer?
Oh, and angst. You know. You're a German choreographer, nonetheless.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And so, but it was the first time, because in street dance we don't think of ourselves. I mean, now because it's becoming quote unquote formal and this it's become this thing, but you know, we didn't think of ourselves as choreographers, because as a street dancer you create your own movement, and that's the whole package. In the beginning, even when it became a professional thing, in the beginning, a lot of those dancers who are choreographing for those videos didn't get paid, because they were like, oh, we'll just do it. We don't care. This is what we do. They'll choreograph and dance in the video, and then realize, oh, these are separate things, and people get paid for this as a separate thing. So I never thought of myself as a choreographer. So when I went into when I sort of evolved into the theater and focused it in the theater, it just never occurred to me in that way that I was doing anything different than what, you know, one of my peers would do if they were given the chance, you know.
I'm talking with choreographer Rennie Harris. The Rennie Harris Pure Movement is a hip-hop dance company that will perform this Friday and Saturday at Reynolds Industries Theater as part of Duke Performances, and we're talking to him today on the state of things. So tell us a little bit more about, we talked earlier about the dance kind of receding into the background. Talk about that evolution.
Well, you know, so at the originally, the Bloc Party, you would have a table with a DJ, and the MC was generally next to the DJ because there was really nowhere to stand, or unless he was on the platform. And then sometimes they had a platform, but the MC was standing on it in the back or next to the DJ. And then in front, of course, were the dancers, and the dancers were always featured. Right. So they were in many ways the stars of that community. Like, hey, the Pop Along Kids from North Philly are going to battle the Scanner Boys from North Philly. And like people want to see that battle. And so they come out. And, oh, by the way, Sex Machine is playing, or either it's Disco Rat or any of those cats from back in the day. And then you have your MCs that go along with the DJ. Right. So it's a crew of MCs that will always be with the DJ, like you up and up the bottom. I'm going up. I was trying to figure out how to say call it the bottom and say up the bottom.
But, yeah.
A place in Philadelphia called the Bottom. You had B-Force. You know, they had a bunch of MCs and DJs. And so it was a full crew. And then you would invite these dancers, and the dancers were always in front. So when I toured, I did one of the first rap tours across the country called the Fresh Festival. And this officially started in 84, but we started in 83 unofficially. And so we had our own stage in front of the DJs, I mean, in front of the MCs. So there was like maybe 100 feet out away from the 100 or 200 feet away from the main stage. We were in front of it. The dancers went on first. They were featured, and then the MCs and the DJs. And now with hip hop dance, they fire you. Basically, they fire with the breakers and poppers and lockers. There's a crew, so there's always 10 or 15 of them. And so they fired everybody or let them go nicely and hired hip hop dancers. And so the hip hop dancers normally come in a pair. They're always two. And so this is where you get the backup dancing starts to happen for street dance. And not specifically this is not the reason for it, but this is one of the moments that sort of helps usher in that thing for hip hop, for street dance, for rap. And so you have these hip hop dancers now backing up the rapper, and it's just two of them doing party social dances rather than breaking or popping or locking.
How much, as the MCs gained a more active role, did the music change? I mean, it seems to me that's also coincidentally, or maybe not so much coincidentally, where we started to hear more jazz worked into the music itself, jazz sounds.
Well, jazz had always been an influence for hip-hop. I mean, even the dances. I mean, when you look at the dances, there are a lot of them old jazz dances regurgitated, you know. And so with the same thing with the music. So that was a natural between jazz and funk and R&B, you know, rock too. Before rock changed with Elvis, all of these things were natural progression into hip-hop culture. And a lot of times we think about, especially with rock, people forget that the face of rock changed with Elvis. You know what I mean? And so, but prior to when it was black, it still had a major influence in the culture, and it still did. And so when we look at hip-hop, it makes sense that it's a natural progression. So it really, I have to say, I was upset when I heard a quote from about Wynton Marsalis talking about hip hop and that it didn't have any musical foundation, and but yet at the same time, you know, it's coming out of the jazz era. Even the terminology and the codification and all the language is coming from the swing and jazz era, you know. And so it was natural for me, I think, for jazz for the hip hoppers to reach back and go back into the crates and get the jazz out. Now, the issue becomes, you know, we didn't have school. I mean, where we didn't have a school where they had a music program. Music programs were done in the 70s. And so what else would we do? So what we do is create our own music, and we still honor our forefathers, and we're still honoring our heritage by sampling and saying we can't play the music because we don't know how, because the music programs are gone now, and everyone's too poor to, you know, buy an instrument. So we're going to figure out how to still honor, you know, the guys who came before us. And so I think people sort of took it the wrong way when rappers started sampling jazz music and music before, because it was just a thing that, because no one at the time could do it, you know.
Rennie Harris, good to talk with you. So good to talk with you today on The State of Things.
Oh, thank you.
My guest is hip-hop choreographer Rennie Harris. Rennie Harris Pure Movement is a hip-hop dance company performing Friday and Saturday at the Reynolds Industry Theater at Duke University. There's more of The State of Things just ahead. Please stay tuned.